Hello, and welcome to Schick Talk, a podcast presented by the Swine Health Information Center. Schick is made possible by Pork Checkoff funding, and the mission of Schick is to protect and enhance the health of the U.S. swine herd through coordinated global and domestic disease monitoring, targeted research investments, and analysis of swine health data. The purpose of our podcast is to share information we gather from experts throughout the swine industry. I'm Barb Detterman, your host for Schick Talk, and today we welcome Schick's Associate Director, Dr. Lisa Becton, and Dr. Liz Wagstrom, consultant to the pork industry of Wagstrom Consulting. First of all, congratulations and welcome aboard, Lisa, as you join our Schick team as Associate Director. And thanks, Liz, for talking with us about this new economic information about JEV. So let's begin with Lisa and have you tell us a little bit of background about JEV and why Schick is even looking at JEV.
Japanese encephalitis virus, or JEV, is an arthropod-borne virus that is considered to be zoonotic. So it affects both humans and animals. This is a virus that is not currently in the United States. And it was something that came to the attention of the Swine Health Information Center through our global monitoring. Because our mission is focused on identifying emerging disease threats, the virus really caught our attention in 2022 because there was an outbreak of JEV in Australia in a region that had not normally seen the virus. And so the concern is of the zoonotic potential, but also the potential to infect swine farms. And that did happen. And so there was a lot of concern that if it could happen, infection is current in Australia, what could be the comparable response should the virus get into the United States? As one component of our efforts to really have preparedness and form a response in the event the virus hits the U.S., we really needed to do different studies, such as understanding the economic impact of the disease. So JEV is an issue for us that we wanted to monitor and really understand what are the impacts to look at the virus and to understand what does it look like in the U.S. We went to Dr. Liz Wagstrom and asked her to help us with an economic assessment of JEV and provide an estimate of what would this potentially look like in the U.S.
So Liz, as you pulled together this information, what did your team find out?
Well, I was very fortunate to have a great team of economists and production veterinarians. So I have to give kudos to Holly Cook, who's an economist with National Pork Producers Council, Dermot Hayes at Iowa State, Steve Myers, who is well known within the swine industry as an economist, and then Dr. Mark Weaver with PIC helped us on the production veterinary side. So I just tried to herd those minds into one spot where we could put together the paper. We also had really good veterinarians that are in Australia that really helped us understand what Australia went through and the impacts to the Australian herd.
What kind of information did you find out that's good for us in the U.S. industry?
So our Australian veterinary colleagues were amazing with being open, transparent, really sharing their experiences with us. And what we found out was when JEV hit in Australia, rather than seeing it march across the country, they had multiple herds in multiple states break at the same time. And while some of those first herds were relatively close to the Murray-Darling River Basin, there was not a march across the country. It just seemed like it happened all at one time. The impacts were pretty devastating. They were looking at reproductive failure mainly. They had no impacts observed in weaned and finishing pigs. It was all on sow farms. And they were seeing abortions, stillborn pigs, deformed pigs. They shared pictures of necropsies of pigs that were actually born without brains. I mean, it was amazing the neurological impacts on those pigs. In some farms, there was just a few litters affected and for a very short time, and other farms were impacted for several months. And so overall, what the Australians estimated was that approximately 60% of their commercial farms had been impacted. And those farms on an annual basis lost somewhere between 3 to 6% of their annual production. And then what was pretty amazing is that after this storm, I guess I'd call it, of JEV outbreaks, it went away. And in all of 2023, I think they saw one gilt that was found positive and nothing else. And so what we spent a lot of time talking about, and you'll see in the paper if you read it, is that wondering what it was they did to address it, because they clearly have other mosquito-borne diseases going on in Australia. They're having a big outbreak of Murray River encephalitis, which is more horse and people-focused and not pig-focused. But it's not that the mosquitoes went away. It's that they have changed things within their industry.
What did you find as far as the economic impact that could possibly affect us?
The first thing we did, and Schick has been very good about funding a risk assessment. And so I was able to have some conversations with the principal investigator at Kansas State, who is head of that risk assessment, and looked at, first of all, do we have the right kind of mosquitoes? We do. And we have Culex, which is one of them, and Aedes, which is the other mosquito type. And they are pretty widely spread around the areas of where we raise pigs. The other things that the Australians had told us, and it was really hard to analyze their serology data compared to their production data that they shared, was that the impression was, or their hypothesis was, that animals that were kept in mechanically ventilated barns seemed to be more protected than those that are kept in barns with natural ventilation. And their estimation is that 90% of their sow farm gestation in their commercial herds is in naturally ventilated barns. And so that was one of the big differences we saw between the US and Australia that we further explored. Additionally, herd size, we tend to have larger sow herds than they do in Australia. And we just have more swine herds. We have multiples of what they have in Australia. But those were some of the findings we really wanted to explore with and really focus in on, was that difference between mechanical and naturally ventilated barns.
You know, when we look at JEV, obviously it's a mosquito-borne, but there's also the component of water birds as a potential reservoir. And so, Liz, when you looked at the economic assessment, did you compare potentially what Australia was experiencing in their bodies of water and water birds compared to the U.S.? And I know that's a little bit more difficult, but how is that also entered into the economic assessment?
That's a great question, Lisa. The Australian veterinarians really felt that the idea that it was herons and bitterns and egrets that were the only competent hosts for JEV was misguided, that they felt there were other water birds involved. And they actually had one of their societies, scientific societies that studies birds, put together a description of what they felt the characteristics of a competent host bird was. And so they started looking at what birds congregate. They felt in Indonesia, where they felt this virus came from, how those birds moved. And one of the really interesting findings they had was the original research done on Japanese encephalitis virus, focusing in on those three types of birds, the bitterns, the herons, the egrets, only focused on them because that was how much research funding they had, and that they hadn't really looked at other bird species and their competencies. So they felt that there were other types of birds that could be involved. So we listed that as a potential research gap that maybe Schick could take a look at funding. But we also looked as much at water as we did at birds. One of the things that they found in Australia was they've got a lot of lagoons where birds congregate instead of what we have in a lot of deep pit buildings. But where we have deep pits, we definitely still have water. I mean, we in the Midwest especially have lakes and creeks and other bodies of water. So that we didn't feel we could focus just on is water around. And so we became more of a generalist and spread our analysis nationwide, focused mainly on ventilation type of buildings.
When you look at the comparison of the size of the Australian industry versus the United States, how did the assessment take that into consideration when coming up with your outcomes?
So what the Australians found is that herd size didn't seem to make a big difference. They did feel, at least one of them felt, that farrow to finish sites were more impacted than breeding herds with off-site nursery and finisher. And that led us to think that perhaps because those farrow to finish sites just had more susceptible pigs, that that could be an issue. They did say that they had very few of their outdoor pig herds that were impacted. They probably have many, many more outdoor pig herds than they have commercial herds, but those herds may have 10 sows or less, you know, very small outdoor pig herds. So the question was, were these herds impacted and they just didn't report, or were they not impacted? Now, clearly, if you're looking at mosquito exposure, those herds should have as much or more mosquito exposure than any of the commercial herds. So herd size was another variable that was really hard to determine, other than the fact that they seemed to say farrow to finish sites had more impact than those that had offside weaning and finishing. But realizing the case definition for JEV in Australia included reproductive failure. So they weren't testing finishing herds. They weren't reporting them as cases. So those weaned pigs and finishing pigs may have been susceptible to virus. They may be carrying virus. They weren't showing clinical signs. So while they might have been able to amplify the virus, they weren't part of the case definition.
You know, when you were still looking at this, or at least visiting with the Australians on their outbreak, when we think about breeding herds, we also come into mind of the boars. When you guys looked at this and visited with the Australians, were boars taken into account for the economic assessment and impact?
Boar situation was dramatic, and it wasn't widespread. There were two boar studs that were reported to go down. One was an internal boar stud that boars became infected. They actually developed an infection in their tubules of the testicles and stopped being able to ejaculate sperm because of the scarring in the tubules. And so some of the boars actually had ruptured tubules. And of the two boar studs that we talked about, one eventually had boars after several months come back to fertility. The other said that they had kept boars for up to three cycles of being able to produce sperm, and these boars remained just absolutely infertile. They were not able to ejaculate any sperm. So what we did look at for the economic analysis was that we understand there may be a, with different breeding techniques, we may have enough boars that if some boar studs went down, that we could actually be able to still produce enough semen for the industry. Of course, the question is ownership of some of those boar studs and whether a boar stud in one system went down, if another system would sell or provide semen. So we couldn't come up with a number. What we did say was that for an individual boar stud that went down, it would be very economically devastating on that individual farm. Just as if a sow farm went down, it would be more economically devastating for that one farm than industry-wide.
That's definitely a concern as we look at the overall impacts. And so when you guys had literally compiled all the data together, what was the collective impact if this should reach the United States?
I'm glad you asked that, because this was the, you know, really our final output. So what we did is we really looked at size and ventilation types. So we have 2.5 million pigs in Australia versus our 72 million, and 90% of their sow farms are naturally ventilated versus what we got from our National Animal Health Monitoring System is that we have 88% of our sows kept in mechanically ventilated buildings. But as I started talking with various production veterinarians, we know that the different types of mechanical ventilation vary tremendously. So we have filtered barns where they rarely observe mosquitoes, to other types of mechanically ventilated barns that may have fewer mosquitoes than a naturally ventilated barns, but where mosquitoes are still a concern. So what we did is we started talking to people within the industry who might give us an estimate on the number of U.S. sows that are kept in filtered systems. We did ask about tunnel ventilated systems that might reduce mosquito exposure, and then how those varied by region. With calculations, how we put them together, and these are, of course, estimations that we hope are close to correct, knowing that they are not exact, but estimated that there's about 1 million of the 3.388 million sows in the upper Midwest that are kept in filtered barns. And then because there was some potential protective capabilities of mechanically ventilated systems, we estimated that 40% of the remaining sows in the upper Midwest would be affected, sites would be affected versus 60% in Australia. In the Atlantic region, where we know there's a lot more natural ventilation, estimated that the impact would be similar to Australia, with 60% of sites being affected. And then in the lower Midwest and the rest of the country, we stuck with that 40% affected, similar to those non-filtered systems in the upper Midwest. So that meant that overall, there's about 2.1 million sows that would be affected, about just under 600,000 of those in the Atlantic region, just under 1 million in the upper Midwest, and about 500,000 in the lower Midwest, and about 83,000 in the rest of the U.S. So using that 3 to 6% annual output reduction on affected sites that the Australians observed, if you spread that across the United States using those number of sows that we estimated, it'd be about a 1% to 2% reduction in total U.S. output. And so if we looked at cash receipts from 2022, economic losses to the U.S. swine herd would be between $306 million and $612 million. And if you put that down on a 2,500-head sow farm that weans 30 pigs per sow per year, and assuming that a weaned pig is worth $40, that loss would be between $90,000 and $180,000 for that 2,500-head sow farm. And so we considered that at the sow farm level, those losses are similar to impacts of a bad PRRS break. Now, realizing that there's not the downstream impacts that we see with a PRRS break in nursery and finishing, but just on the reproductive losses, put that in context, it would be similar to what we'd see with a bad PRRS break.
When you did your economic assessment, this was essentially going off the assumption that this was a one point in time outbreak and not considering potential for multiple outbreaks, correct?
That's correct. The Australians feel that JEV is still around and that it is still a risk, but as part of their quality assurance program, where all of their commercial sows virtually are raised under the quality assurance program, the Australians have implemented mosquito control programs. And so they're really focusing on mosquito control on their farms. They're fogging them. They are trying to do away with standing water that they can, you know, as far as obviously you can't do away with your lagoons, but if you've got buckets or tires or any other things that could collect mosquitoes, they are doing that. They are treating lagoons for mosquito larvae with larvicides. So they are very much focused on trying to keep mosquitoes out of their buildings. They don't feel that they have looking at serological studies, they don't feel that they have an immune sow herd. They feel that their lack of breaks is because of their focus on mosquitoes.
When the Australians were also looking at other mitigations or methods to basically tamp down the outbreak, were they able to or had access to vaccines at all?
They had access to human vaccines for their workers if their workers wanted to. And it was pretty interesting in Australia during the outbreak of the people that were infected and died. Only one of those people had any exposure to pigs. It was very much mosquito-borne infecting people as well as the pigs.
And at this point, there is no approved JEV vaccine for use in swine in the U.S. And so essentially, we're evaluating our U.S. swine herd as a completely naive population. Is that what you also assumed in the assessment?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Australians do not appear to be on their way to vaccinating their herds for JEV. You know, they do have, like I said, the vaccine available for people with occupational exposure. And I did go back and look at my numbers. There were 42 human cases in Australia during the outbreak, 7 fatalities, and only one of those 42 cases reported any occupational exposure to pigs.
Well, we're really appreciative of this report because as we look at, again, preparedness efforts for any emerging diseases, having this in-depth understanding of what JEV could potentially cost the U.S. is really important to help drive what methods we might potentially consider in the U.S. And again, also, where do we need to focus our research so that we can continue to expand and improve our capability to prepare and respond?
I do think that's really wise. One of the other things that we did look at and that the Australians stressed was they felt JEV moved with birds and mosquitoes, that moving pigs and moving semen did not move JEV. They had boar studs that broke and they were in areas that broke and they did sero surveys and these boar studs may have gone positive, but they were moving semen into other states in Australia that never broke. And so they felt semen did not move the virus and they also were moving weaned pigs. And makes sense if you think about it, because an animal is viremic for a pretty short time, like 2 to 3 days. I mean, it's very short time. So if you're moving a viremic animal, they would have to move to a new area, stay viremic long enough to get bit by a mosquito, get that mosquito infected, and have those mosquitoes go back and infect the rest of their buddies in their mosquito herds or flocks or whatever you call a mosquito swarm. And then those mosquitoes would have to subsequently bite other pigs and get them infected. So the movement of animals and semen did not seem to play a role in Australia, which I think is encouraging for the U.S. swine herd that with the way we move pigs, that it is probably a fairly low risk activity.
I think that's something that's extremely important for us as producers to understand too, is that movement is not going to cause, as you said earlier, a march across the country of the disease. Liz, thank you very much for all that information. Where can we find this report, by the way, Lisa?
Sure. This information and the full report can be found at the Swine Health Information's website, which is swinehealth.org. And so you can find that and many other pieces of information, including fact sheets and other reports and articles.
We have a resource there that's not easily found in other parts of the United States. So we really appreciate Liz's contribution on the economic study, but also all the other pieces that go together on the JEV investigations that we're doing. So thank you. Liz, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I'd just like to thank Schick for giving me the opportunity to do this. I'm clearly not an economist. It was really fun working with a very talented team. Really, I learned a lot, very much have become a believer that the U.S. swine industry needs to be taking mosquito exposure seriously, because that's going to be what protects us if JEV does enter the United States.
Lisa, anything you'd like to add?
You know, as I said earlier, this study really is just one component in our whole comprehensive look at JEV, trying to understand this emerging disease. We will be utilizing this information as we go forward and select proposals for JEV. Schick is doing this as a joint call with the Foundation for Food and Agriculture. So please look forward to continued information, and we're excited to have proposals coming in later in April so we can continue to research this disease.
Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, very much for sharing this very important information. It's great to cross economics with our veterinarian health. So we appreciate that look at it and how it might affect the U.S. pork industry. Join us again as we continue our series of Schick Talk to provide information to producers and veterinarians throughout the United States about emerging diseases. As a reminder, Schick is made possible by Pork Checkoff funding, and our mission is to protect and enhance the health of the U.S. swine herd. We do that through coordinated global and domestic disease monitoring, targeted research investments, and analysis of swine health data. Thank you for your time, and please have a good day.